Debatable drunk might be a problem.
We'll try one time.
I think we should have one debatable a year without warning, where everyone just shows up completely trashed like a drunk history, and we just have to work through it for an hour.
Oh, that wasn't today. Acceptance of
your choice.
Amazing Gutierrez, that's Charles McDonald, that's Bill Barnwell. You guys actually bring back some, I don't know, some agony from my past where I was a kid and I used to hate my name. And there would be like, you know, normal names like Bill and Charles. And then there would be Israel Gutierrez. And like everybody would just ask me a bunch of questions. I just hated it. I wanted to change my name.
What would you change it to?
I mean, that's a terrible question because I've had like a blank slate for my middle name since I was born because my parents were lazy and didn't give me one. And I could never come up with the perfect middle name. So I probably don't think what I probably don't know what I would do for.
You have.
But Izzy works out better.
You have all this space to work with and you're not taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I really wanted to like work with, I was thinking of initials, and so I wanted to come up with either an X middle name, which would be amazing, or a Q middle name, but couldn't really come up with it. Xavier isn't really fun enough for me, so.
That's
the best
fire.
One I could come up with was Bro, spelled B-R-E-A-U-X, and just have people call me Bro all the time. That would be pretty dope. What do we got, Charlie? We have a show.
All right, guys, we're going to start with some NBA trade deadline talk. We're live. So there hasn't been much yet. There's been the four-team trade involving Marvin Bagley going to the Pistons and the Clippers sending Serge Ibaka to the Bucks, who are in need for a center. The Celtics are trading PG Dozier and Bol Bol. But we're going to talk about the trade that might happen as we get closer to the deadline. And that is, if you were Daryl Morey, would you go and get James Harden today or wait to sign him this summer?
I find it fascinating that Brian Windhorst and Woj are reporting pretty much two different things as we go into this, which makes it like the best possible scenario for me because everything is live. Like if within us, we can't even get this thing right with great reporters, then who knows what's going to happen. But it is crazy interesting that James Harden has now become the guy who is reportedly, according to Woj, wants out of Brooklyn, but doesn't want to say that he wants out because he doesn't want his reputation to be harmed. That ship has passed. Like at this point, like I've seen Michael Lee from the used to work for the Washington Post and cover the Wizards. He said he got a tweet from a player that said Harden's going to have a difficult time finding a former teammate to help induct him into the Hall of Fame because he's already burning so many bridges. I want to get your guys' opinion first before I sort of say what I would do because I feel like I've been saying the same thing for all season long when it comes to Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I think with James Harden, I understand why he is hesitant on just coming out and saying, I would like to declare a trade because, you know, people have accused him of wearing a fat suit in Houston to get out of the Rockets. So I can understand why.
Allegedly.
I didn't say that. Allegedly. Other people on the internet. Not Four Verts on Twitter. Not Charles McDonald. You know, so you're at the point where people have already kind of accused you of quitting on a team once, and you don't want to have that back on your, you know, public persona again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're kind of past the point of no return with this one, James, in terms of what people think of you. So if you're really unhappy in Brooklyn, and look, I think there are a lot of reasons to be unhappy with the Nets right now, mainly the point guard that you joined the team with can only play for half the games and yes. Can't really win a championship when one of your best players can only play in half the games. So I understand why he wants to get out, but I think at this point, just come out and say it, you know, because I think with this scenario, with what team the Nets are and where they are, there's going to be some blowback just because it's James Harden, but I think people will understand him wanting to get to a different situation. And if you can play with someone like Joel Embiid, that seems like a win for James.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, what I find really instructive here is Daryl Morey's Twitter profile. It has a quote in there for as long as I've known Daryl Morey, which is, opportunity is not a lengthy visitor. That tells you, I think, everything Daryl Morey has to think about this situation he has in Philadelphia at the moment. Remember, Daryl Morey was the GM of a Rockets team that had Yao Ming. I think they won like 53 games that year. Yao Ming was 28, and he played five more games in his NBA career. That opportunity, that championship window, disappeared because Yao Ming got hurt. Joel Embiid, I mean, is phenomenal and playing incredible basketball, an MVP candidate, but there's always a chance that Joel Embiid wakes up sometime in August with a back injury and never plays again. Like, I think if you're Daryl Morey, if you're the Sixers, yes, you'd love to wait for the offseason. Maybe you get Harden in free agency. Maybe you can make a deal work then. But, like, this is your window. This is your chance. You have a legitimate chance to win NBA title with James Harden on your roster. Like, I think, you know, you can't let that go by just because it might not be the most economically logical thing. Like, this is your window. Go for it now. Yeah.
Which is why the bluff of, hey, this could take 4 years was obviously a bluff. Like, Joel Embiid is not going to allow that to happen, okay? Especially given his injury history and how he's feeling right now. You know, you look at the Nets, and I start to wonder if it's maybe, you know, the downfall of the super team or the triumvirate, if you will. I know a lot of people looked at those Lakers, you know, with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and Kobe and said, hey, that didn't work, but other teams tried. This one, this player empowerment thing, like James Harden and Ben Simmons involved in the same trade is insane when you think about the things that they've done here. But what I want to focus on is, like, the idea, what is James Harden become? Like, because he has been rumored to have told Steph Curry, hey, I wish I played like you guys, or I wish we played like you guys, because he doesn't want to do it all, right? But he seems to be at his happiest when he's doing it all in his bag, you know, with the crossover and the step back three and everything else. But you pair that with, like, this idea that he quits, not just on teams, but in games. Like, there's this one image of him getting blocked by a Memphis Grizzly the other day, and him, everybody just said, hey, that's the moment he checked out of that game. So if I'm a team with championship aspirations, like, I don't know what I'm getting from James Harden. I don't know if I'm getting a ball-dominant guy who's going to give me 35 and let other people sort of fill in. I don't know if he's going to be the complementary guy to Joel Embiid, because, you know, you seem to have a perfect situation here in Brooklyn. I know they only played, what, 17, 16 games together. But you can show out, you have your friends around you, and, you know, there are times where you can go for 40 if you need to, but it seems like he's just not happy with the whole setup. It seems like he's not happy with Kyrie Irving, and who would be? And then you're just unlucky with the KD injury, because I don't think if KD was healthy that James would be asking out in this situation. I think he's sort of getting out of a burning ship over here. So I just don't believe, if I'm Daryl Morey, I'm doing everything possible to get give as little back for James Harden. Because I just, me personally, I don't know if that's a championship team. I don't know if James Harden as the lead guard is going to win you a championship. And I know that's harsh to say, and I know I probably have to talk to him sometime in the future, and he's not going to want to talk to me because of that. But I just don't see it right now. I think that window happened in Houston, and we're probably past that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think if you're the Sixers, I think you kind of want to get on this trade ASAP, and like Izzy said, you don't want to give as you want to give as little as you can, just because James has been a lot of different players over the past couple of years, and it's kind of hard to you can't give what the Nets gave up for James Harden right now, where it's, you know, what, 4 first round picks and then 3 pick swaps or something like that, and that's a situation that the Sixers, I think, they're looking at this like, hey, if we have a chance to pair Joel Embiid with James Harden and get that Ben Simmons problem off our hands all in the same move, I think that's a good move for the 76ers, because doesn't seem like Ben wants to be there, doesn't seem like James wants to be in Brooklyn, so why not make this swap? And I think that both teams kind of get better for where they are right now. And I think the point about Joel Embiid's health down the line is also a good point, because, you know, guys that big that are that explosive, they're always taking time bombs, really, in every sport. You know, you see guys in football who are like 6'8", 300 pounds that can move like deer, and they get hurt a lot. And Joel Embiid, he's someone that's already had those injury issues. So the clock's ticking.
And that's probably why, Charles, that's probably why Morey has been holding out for a superstar, because you're assuming that you're going to go stretches of time without Joel Embiid over the next 3 or 4 years. You're just hoping that's not in the playoffs, because if that happens, then you probably have no hope. But in that sense, I can totally see why James Harden would be your guy, but I just wouldn't want to think that way. Like, I look at the Brooklyn Nets situation, I'm just like, okay, Ben Simmons, if he's in great shape, if he can defend the way, you know, DPOY level, that's a better fit for them. If you just stick him in the post, make him your 4, or maybe even a small 5, whatever, and have Kyrie and KD, like, that's a better balancing of the floor. And, I mean, I don't think, yes, he's going to have to take some shots, but there's not going to be that many shots left after, you know, KD and Kyrie go. So I look at that and I say, okay, I don't want to scare off the Sixers, because I want to make this trade. I want to get James Harden out of my organization at this point, because he's a bit of a, you know, a malcontent. So you just got to play with it. And they've also got to deal with the potential Kyrie Irving extension, because I don't think any of this happens if Kyrie doesn't commit to an extension. So there's a lot going on here, but I think it's perfect for the Nets to be doing this under the pressure of the trade deadline, because given, you know, given the summer to think about it and all this time, like, so many things can change right now under the gun. That's why I would do it right now, and that's why I think hopefully it will.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things here. You know, like to your point, Izzy, you know, the idea that a big three might not be a good idea, well, it depends on what the big three is, no? I mean, you know, with the Celtics, for example, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce played different roles in that offense, played different roles on defense, had different skill sets, different strengths, played different spots in the lineup. Like, that was a logical big three. Having, you know, having KD, having Kyrie, and having James Harden, like, on paper, you would sit there and say, okay, well, do we need another basketball for these guys to play with? Like, there's going to be so many shots to be taken here, so many opportunities for guys who are going to want the ball in their hands. Like that, you know, on paper, like, it seemed like it would be, they'd find a way to make it work. But there were questions about that on paper when this trade even happened in terms of, you know, the fit on the court itself. And I know they've been, like, the 2-0 graphic popped up. I think they're 11-3 when they've all been on the court together. But I think from the Nets' perspective, you know, this is an embarrassing move. Like you traded Caris LeVert, you traded Jared Allen, you traded all those picks away for James Harden, and this hasn't worked out. Like, it's going to end at some point, unless they somehow manage to get right and win a championship this summer, which is not, I guess, out of the realm of possibility, but seems unlikely at this point. Like, it's almost better to do it now, because then it happens, it's done, you can move on, there's still the rest of the season to work with. It kind of gets away, whereas if it happens over the summer, it's the biggest story in the NBA, probably for a week. Like, it's more embarrassing if it happens that way.
Last thing I'll say about this with Ben Simmons is, you know, a lot of people sort of thought maybe he should go to a low-pressure situation, small market, sort of build up his confidence again. I like the idea of him being a number three on a team. And just, like, not you could be a high-pressure team in a you know, market like New York, but can still be behind KD and Kyrie in the long term and sort of work his way back that way, not really be relied upon to even ignite the offense, much less, you know, actually score. So I think that might be a better fit for him. What else we got, Charlie?
So I actually have one follow-up question on this. And we touched on it a bit, but would you guys judge Harden for wanting a trade out of the situation? Like, this has been chaos. Like, we judged him hard for the Houston situation that he built, but, like, this is different with Kyrie and an injured KD. And
I wouldn't judge him necessarily, but you've got a guy who, of his caliber, of MVP caliber, still presumably in his prime. Why can't you just be the guy that helps turn that around? And if you can't be the guy that helps turn that around, then maybe you're not capable of doing that at this point. And so I think people just consider you bailing because, you know, these are the moments. These are the alphas that are supposed to just kind of take over and go. Like, if it was just KD out there and Kyrie and James weren't, I don't really see KD looking to bail. I know he started this whole thing, but I wouldn't really see him looking as unhappy. I'd see him as like, hey, jump on my shoulders. Let's go do this. And that's where I'm disappointed mostly in James.
Yeah, I don't think I would blame him. Just because, how can you predict what's going to happen with Kyrie Irving when you sign that, when you get traded and you know, think about signing a contract long-term with them? So I wouldn't blame him. I can understand why Nets fans would be upset because they have not gotten what they traded for with all those picks. But, you know, this might just be one of those untenable situations where everyone needs to break up.
Yeah, I mean, like, you got what you asked for. You traded for a player who quit on his team in Houston. So, like, you can't really be mad if he does the same thing in Brooklyn. Like, you knew what you were getting when you traded for James Harden. And I will say, like, in the big picture, realistically, like, who among us has not been James Harden in this situation where you want something to happen? You're telling your friends you want something to happen. You're, like, kind of moping and hinting at it every time you have the opportunity, but you just don't want to come out and say it because it's going to look bad when you say it. That's every one of us in one situation or another. So I empathize with James Harden here. I feel like I, in myself, can see a little bit of James Harden.
Speaking of untenable situations, the Nets national broadcast schedule the next couple of weeks. I mean, I would probably try to flex those games because I don't know if you're going to know anybody playing on the floor. What else we got?
Speaking of games where there were not many real NBA players, the Lakers got washed by these. Well, they didn't really get washed. Oh, the Lakers lost to the zombie Blazers last night. Question: did the Lakers quit?
Ooh. I mean, it's hard to say quit. Well, they lose by two, right?
Yeah,
it's hard to say you quit in a 2-point loss. And they were, I mean, when I checked in, I wasn't really watching, but when I checked in, they seemed to be winning. I've never heard LeBron James more defeated than the other night, last night when he said, I just want some red wine and go to bed. And
not a bad strategy.
I mean, it's a great strategy. I just don't know, like, if they don't make a move of significance by 3 p.m. today, like, I'm just curious if he's never been in this situation. And I mean, okay, we can sit here and talk about Russell Westbrook all we want. He's a problem. He's not the only problem, right? I'm more intrigued with LeBron James and how he sort of handles this, because it's been since, you know, first Cleveland stop where he hasn't had firm championship pressure. And to go through a second half of a season just trying to make a playoff, trying to, you know, let's be honest, if they don't make any moves, it's not like everybody's just going to be, okay, Frank Vogel just going to play, put Westbrook back in the starting lineup, play him on the fourth quarters, and it's not going to happen. They're going to have to do whatever it takes to make this thing work. And so I just would like to see how LeBron deals with this. He can't put them on his shoulders the way he used to anymore. He's just not that athletic, not that explosive, which is crazy to say because he's still plenty explosive. But right. I just want to watch LeBron and see how he deals with this and whether or not it's just like, hey, whole rebuild next offseason, or maybe he, you know, considers moving or try to force him somewhere. I'm just wildly intrigued by LeBron because I've never seen him that upset, that sort of demoralized before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to say that they quit because, like I said, they only lost by 2 points. But I think the main thing is this Lakers team just isn't very good.
Yeah.
But the big thing to me is you lost to a Trailblazers team that, you know, I don't know if you guys play NBA 2K, but like this is what the team looks like when you start a franchise mode. And you're like, well, they only have one star player, so I'm going to trade them, and then we're going to start over with all the players that I like to draft and whatnot. So they have lost to like a really bare bones Trailblazers team, and I think to me, not that I thought that they were championship contenders really at this point, but no serious champion contenders are going to be losing to teams that are looking like they're headed towards like a serious rebuild that don't even have their best player out on the court. So I think for the Lakers, this is just another kind of disappointing reminder that you didn't build a team that was, you know, capable of stepping up to this moment in the late stages of LeBron's career. And also, you kind of need to get a little bit more out of Anthony Davis than what you've been getting recently, because he has not always been the player that you traded all those draft picks and prospects for.
If the podcast audience heard a giggle there, that's because Charles put down a card that says the Blazers just lost to the Magic by 28 points the other night. So
interjection, here we go.
What do we got, Charlie?
Well, this is actually I want to build a bit on what Charles said there, which is about Anthony Davis. He took zero shots in the fourth quarter last night. This is a guy who we have compared to Tim Duncan in the past. We've compared to Patrick Ewing when he was coming out of Kentucky as one of the most dominant defensive bigs coming into the NBA in a generation. And has your perception of him changed this year? This is the guy on the team who's in his prime, who can guard Embiid, who can guard Jokic, who can guard Giannis, and he doesn't make them a winning team.
This is me doing a 180 on Anthony Davis. I used to think he was spectacular, and now I don't know so much.
It's so bizarre, though, because just even in that bubble run when they won the title, he was excellent, and now he just seems like a totally different player than that, and that wasn't even that long ago. So I'm just trying to figure out what the hell happened here.
I got people tweeting he's not even a Hall of Famer if he retires right now. They should take him off the top 75 list. It's just they're really, really down on Anthony Davis, and it's not just the injuries, which is the first thing, you know, that people go to. It's it's some of this, you know, toughness. It's get on my back. Like, of the players on this team, of the star players, he's the only one in his prime. He's the one that you're supposed to say, okay, it's your turn. This is why LeBron presumably picked him as the guy that he's wanted to team up with down the stretch, because he's got so much left and he's so versatile, but we're just not seeing it. And like, there's been a couple of games against Milwaukee, one way earlier in the season that I was at in Milwaukee, and then the most recent one, where there's just some spells where you're just like, wow, you're getting dominated here. Like, it's nothing shameful to be dominated by, like, Giannis Antetokounmpo, but for an entire game or for an entire stretch, and you just don't feel like you're fighting back. And I think that's what's missing from Anthony Davis. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of fight there.
Yeah. I will say that when I saw that producer intervention, I was sure it was going to be the James Harden trade. So I'm very sad it was not. I'm waiting for this breaking news.
That's why you were so excited.
That's why I was excited. I don't really care.
Can we get a different graphic? Can we get a different card for potential breaking news? Because Bill's got to get his heart rate down a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still sweating after that news. I mean, the thing with the Lakers has been for like the past couple of months, like, okay, we're waiting for X to happen and then we're going to be fine. Like, okay, as long as we get Anthony Davis back, but yeah, we suck right now, but once we get Anthony Davis back, we're going to be good. Well, they got Anthony Davis back. They're not that good. Okay, maybe once we get Russ out of this world. They benched Russ for a stretch. Russ didn't even play last night in that game, and they were still bad. They lost to a zombie Blazers team. Like, now it's the trade deadline. You know, LeBron came out in that press conference and said, like, and we've seen other Lakers come out and say, hey, like, Like, we need to make a change. Something has to happen here at this trade deadline. Magic Johnson, the happiest, most optimistic person on Twitter, as this card says, quote unquote, after the Lakers lost to Portland tonight, I'm speechless. No words can describe how I'm feeling. If anyone is capable of using words to describe how they feel, it's Magic Johnson. That's what the depths the Lakers have plumbed to. And I think the hardest part for me, the hardest part to see, is James Worthy coming out and saying that I want to get the exact quote here. I think we have a card for it. He said, after this game, this was the lowest point of any season I've seen as a Laker over the years. Crazy. James Worthy saw the Kwame Brown era. Like,
Mike D'Antoni was coaching a team for the Lakers that Kendall Marshall, I believe that's his name, right? Kendall Marshall from North Carolina was like the star and like dishing out 15 assists, but it was the saddest team I've ever been around. That was, I think, before late season flexing on the schedule, and they were terrible. And we go in there, and it's just poor Mike D'Antoni, just the life sucked out of him. That is way sadder than this. Like, this team might still make the playoffs at some point. That team had no hope.
That's how scary this is, though.
Right, but I kind of see what he's saying, because you came into the season, at least if you're, you know, someone who is involved with the Lakers organization and a fan, you came in the season with some sort of expectations, like, we have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. We won't be that bad, really. And it turns out, no, you're pretty mediocre team, which I think is probably the most frustrating part for James Worthy, because I think James is probably looking at this like, man, whenever the Lakers have had these two stars, we haven't really fallen to these depths. And that's probably what is, you know, hurting his feelings so bad. But it's just kind of crazy to see a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis be under 500 and don't really even take them seriously as championship contenders.
I think I was doing some sort of skating motion because I think Anthony Davis is skating. Like, I think everything should be on him. Like, honestly, the more I think about it, it should absolutely be on him. This is the torch trying to be passed from those guys to him, and he's just refusing to take it. And I don't know if it's, you know, maybe he's not in great shape because he's been in and out of the lineup or what, but it just doesn't seem like he's the guy who's wanting to take that. And, you know, you want to talk about, like, bubble numbers. He was a way better shooter in the bubble from three than he has been since. And you could talk about, you know, no crowd and the, you know, the backdrop and everything else and say maybe that was part of the reason. But, you know, you say that a team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. The LeBron James part, yes, 100% hard to believe that they're struggling to make the playoffs. A team with Anthony Davis? We've seen that. We've seen that quite a bit over 7 years when he was in New Orleans. So I'm not shocked. What else do we have, Charlie?
Well, actually, I have one more follow-up, just a quick one.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Do you think Russell Westbrook was rooting against the Lakers last night?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, he got with back tightness, which you know is a fake injury, really. I think he was. I think he was looking for – I mean, I don't think he's very happy with Frank Vogel. Obviously, he bit back at him after the second time. He didn't play him down the stretch. And, you know, next thing you know, he's sitting out with a back injury. So I think Russ might take this a little bit personally because he, you know, he's going to always have the excuse of I had the most to adjust to, and I was the one in there every game, and these guys were out for other injuries, and now everybody's blaming me. And so I can see him being pretty frustrated by that and saying, yeah, you guys can eat it for a little bit. I'm just going to sit back here.
Was it DK Metcalf who said he was not going to watch the Super Bowl because he wanted to catch up on Euphoria? I feel like that might have been Russell Westbrook last night. Like, I don't think he watched the game.
Well, spoiler alert, Zendaya's already got that Emmy locked up.
Oh, yeah.
That an amazing performance.
100%.
What else do we have?
All right, we're going to move on to a new game. It's called
New Game.
Where Will I Lose My Money?
Ooh, what a terrible game.
And I don't know if you guys have heard it, but there's a big game this weekend. There is a Super Bowl, and we're going to go through some prop bets. I'm going to give them to you one at a time of where I'm leaning. And you'll tell me if I'm right or wrong. Am I going to blow my money on this bet? First one.
Oh, no.
Joe Burrow to have more passing yards than Matthew Stafford. This is even.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a segment that I'm going to call Teaching Izzy How to Gamble. Because I am not a gambler. Like, I don't gamble unless I'm playing poker somewhere. And so this is kind of embarrassing to relay, but, like, those numbers don't really mean much to me. No. I don't know what a money line is. Okay, so all of this is going to be brand new to me, so I'm going to let you guys figure out the gambling part. Go for it.
Charles.
Okay. Joe, I mean, I kind of like the odds on this bet just because...
What are the odds?
Plus 100. So what, if you bet $1, you win $1, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yep,
yeah,
even
yeah.
That's
easy. This one's even easy. Out. So
take a note real quick.
I kind of like Joe Burrow to finish the game with more passing yards than Stafford because I think the Rams are a better team, and I think mm-hmm. that Joe Burrow might be coming from behind at some point. And also, if you're the Bengals, why would you be trying to get into a mess where you're running the ball against Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Leonard Floyd when you can't mm-hmm. block a soul up front? So I think that this is going to be a heavy dose of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. I would mm-hmm. put the game plan on their backs and say, go figure it out against Jalen Ramsey and don't try to get your head taken off in the same time, Joe. And I think that that's kind of going to be their path for the game. And to me, that would lead them to get more yards than Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bill, what does yeah. that what does that part in parentheses mean? Betting Stafford would be minus 120.
So minus 120 is it means you have to bet $120 to win $100 on Matthew Stafford. If Matthew Stafford has more yards than Joe Burrow. I think Charles is 100% correct, but the problem is I think Charles is very smart. And I think Zach Taylor is maybe smart, but I'm not totally yeah. sure yet because they went into that Chiefs game and they decided we're just going to run Joe Mixon and we're going to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. And that did not work. They went down 21-0, 21-3. Like it was a ugly sight until they started throwing the ball and turned things around. Now, maybe, hopefully, Zach Taylor learned his lesson and is smart. But I would not rule out that the Rams come into this game with two deep safeties and a nickel package on the field. And they say, hey, Joe Mixon, you want to run the ball for 2.8 yards per carry? Here is your opportunity. And Zach Taylor is going to say, hey, we can't block Aaron Donald. I'm going to run straight at him and see if that works. It's not going to work. I think that the logical move would be to throw the ball, and I think it could work out, but it wouldn't shock me if they didn't start throwing the ball until they absolutely, desperately had to throw the football. And so to me, I think I would take the Matthew Stafford side, even though, Izzy, I'd have to spend more money to win the same amount of money if I bet on Matthew Stafford.
Yes, that's all I've been wrapping my mind around for the entire time you've been talking. But I will add, yes, I do agree that Stafford will have more. And I think just the Jalen Ramsey element, I know Ja'Marr Chase is not the only weapon Cincinnati mm-hmm. has, but if you sort of do your best at Jalen Ramsey at taking him away, and he probably is mm-hmm. best suited than anybody else in the league, then that probably just means Matthew Stafford's numbers will be a little higher. What's the next mm-hmm. prop bet?
All right, we got another player matchup prop. And this time I am going with chalk. Okay. On the heels of a historic season and a historic postseason, mm-hmm. I am willing to bet that Cooper Kupp will have more receiving yards than Ja'Marr Chase at minus 200, even though
ooh.
Superstar Ja'Marr mm-hmm. Chase would be getting good odds at 165.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, things are looking so much more, making so much more sense to me now. Cooper Kupp, by the way, low-key getting a James Harden beard situation going. I wonder how long that's going to go. But Charles, what do you think?
Man, this is tough because the thing with the production is I think that Cooper Kupp has a more steady path towards mm-hmm. getting more yards than Ja'Marr Chase. But as we've seen this year, Ja'Marr Chase, he can go off for an 80-yard touchdown, 70-yard touchdown, 60-yard touchdown, mm-hmm. in the blink of an eye. So this is kind of tough. I think I would lean Cooper Kupp in this scenario to have more yards. But in terms of the value of the bet, I think I like Ja'Marr Chase at plus 165 just because I know that I have a chance to get something crazy with him or maybe even a couple mm-hmm. crazy things. So we saw in that Chiefs game, the first Chiefs game, they had 11 catches, 266 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's going to have a tough matchup with Jalen Ramsey, but mm-hmm. he's had like some inexplicable plays this year where next thing you know, he's running past everybody in the defense. And who knows, that can mm-hmm. happen again. So I do think that Cooper Kupp will have more yards than Ja'Marr Chase, but I like Chase's value on the bet a little bit more than minus.
So you like mm-hmm. the value, but you also are more likely to lose all of your money.
Yes, but that's the fun of it.
Yes,
that's what
exactly.
the game's called.
Ooh, that sounds amazing.
Exactly. What's the fun in betting $100 to win $50 when you can bet $100 to win $165 and bet on like the most exciting player in the NFL at stretches this year in Ja'Marr Chase? Now, I'm going to tell you guys how I feel about this matchup from what I watched when I watched Jalen Ramsey against the Seahawks earlier this year. Like, you'd figure, okay, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, he's probably going to stick on DK Metcalf. He did not stick on DK Metcalf for all that game. It was like 60% DK Metcalf and then maybe 25-30% Tyler Lockett. And 10% of the time, he was on some backup dude I'd never heard of. He was on, like, DJ Dallas, or he was on the third string tight end. Like, they were comfortable leaving him outside for stretches and just not having him against one of their star wide receivers. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett had opportunities because of that. The Rams, I think they play man-to-man at the second lowest rate in all of football. So to me, I don't think we're going to have Jalen Ramsey versus Jamar Chase snap after snap, even though Jalen Ramsey might be saying that publicly. I think in reality, it's going to be like 60% Jamar Chase, 30% T. Higgins, maybe 10% a bunch of other dudes. So to me, I think there's going to be enough opportunities for Jamar Chase against the other cornerbacks in that Rams secondary, which, by the way, not very good outside of Jalen Ramsey. I think there's going to be opportunities for Jamar Chase to make plays. So to me, I think given those odds, Izzy, I am going to take Jamar Chase.
Yeah,
I also like the odds on Jamar Chase.
There we go.
I do believe Cooper Kupp is option number one, but I don't think there's much of a gap between him and Odell, and, you know, just them running that offense, and obviously they create that stuff for Cooper. But I do think there's a gap between Chase, not necessarily talent wise, but in terms of how they look for him. And I do think that he will, you know, he'll probably. And if you're saying that they're not going to go man to man a lot, and he might find some spots, I think Jamar Chase is a good value bet. How about that? Look at me.
There we go.
If you could, you're telling me I can get Jamar Chase on Darius Williams for like 40% of the snaps, I'm taking that plus 165.
But you might get Cooper Kupp versus Eli Apple, and that's another consideration.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
What's the next one?
We got another one here, and we're going to talk about the other side of the ball and someone who is one of the marquee players in the game, and that's Aaron Donald. The bet is who will have the most sacks in the Super Bowl. Aaron Donald is plus 360. Given that the Bengals offensive line could not keep Joe Burrow upright for most of this postseason, I think I want to go chalk and bet on the favorite. Other options are Von Miller, plus 360. Also, Trey Hendrickson, plus 650. Leonard Floyd, plus 500. And Sam Hubbard, plus 1,100. Your thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Bill?
That's okay. He can be Bill if he wants. It's fine. I wrote about this game today for ESPN, and I almost could not contain myself thinking about Aaron Donald versus, I mean, a bunch of dudes for the Bengals. It's just like, it's backups, it's replacement level guys, it's guys off the street. It's like you're trying to block a space alien with normal human being people, and that's just not a recipe that's gonna work. Like
they're not gonna just have one guy on him very much, right? They're gonna try to double him as much as possible. No,
that's what I think the Rams are really good at, though, is they will try their best to get two or three guys on Aaron Donald. But number one, you have Leonard Floyd to worry about, you have Von Miller to worry about, so those guys can also create havoc. And then I think number two, the Rams are really good at sort of creating those one-on-one opportunities with how they line guys up, how they move guys around. You know, they can move Aaron Donald anywhere along the defensive front. They can line him up way outside right tackle, so the right tackle has no choice but to try and take him. So to me, I think they're going to try and they're going to succeed at some time at having double and triple teams. That's going to happen, but there's definitely going to be moments where he's one-on-one. And I've seen Aaron Donald beat double teams this postseason with like two consecutive moves in a row. Like to have him beat one guy – even if he only gets 15 chances in this game, he might go 15 for 15 on those chances.
But Charles, this bet's fun because, you know, he could create all the attention and somebody else, you know, reaps the rewards and gets the actual sack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could. But at the same time, you know, someone said that he's going against a normal offensive line. I don't even think it's normal. Like, Hakeem is energy, not to slander the man, but he might be the worst starting right guard in the NFL. And the right tackle, Isaiah Prince, isn't much better. So when you look at the matchups that you can do with Aaron Donald, we've already seen an example of him getting a sack off the edge this postseason against Tampa Bay. They lined him up at the end, and he went against a backup right tackle who's probably a little bit better than Isaiah Prince. And, you know, he was able to get a sack on Tom Brady. And I think with the Rams and Aaron Donald specifically in this case, I think the Bengals, they're going to have to put extra guys on Aaron Donald just to have a chance at stopping him, but he is so much better than the guys that he's about to go against on Sunday that I'm not even sure that other people will have time, like a Leonard Floyd will have time to get a cleanup sack. And if you're going to talk about, well, we can't even really double Aaron Donald all the time because if they send five, then we're going to have one-on-one matchups everywhere, or we're going to have to deal with Von Miller, or we're going to have to deal with Leonard Floyd. They're not really equipped to handle any of these guys coming off the edge or through the middle. So I think I would take Aaron Donald at plus 360 just because it's like literally a first ballot Hall of Fame defensive tackle, one of the greatest athletes who's ever seen play in the NFL against guys who would be on practice squads and other rosters.
Yeah, this is one of those where I'd be throwing away my money. throwing away my money because, like, how will I lose my money on this bet right here? Because it's just so many random things that can happen here. I love the Sam Hubbard number, so I'm going to go with that. Okay. I want to win $1,100.
You're making a lot of money. I appreciate that.
You're loaded, dude.
I love this. Yeah. You're taking all dogs, Izzy.
Yeah, there we go. This is why I don't gamble.
Our next one is more of a yes or no. I call this one the Odell Beckham special. And the question is, will a non-QB throw a TD in the Super Bowl? Yes is plus 1,400. Knowing how they like to get Odell going in this offense, and he also, you know, is sort of an awesome option in this situation, I'm hammering the yes here.
Wow.
Well, really quick, before we answer, are there any other non-QBs on either roster that you think might be a candidate for this? Because OBJ is an obvious one, but I'm trying to think of anybody on the other team.
Yes.
Think of one, right?
Johnny Hecker. Johnny Hecker, the Rams punter. They love fake punts. Now, he's got to throw it real far for a fake punt touchdown.
I guess
he could do a fake field goal for a touchdown. I would not bet on this bet, but I would feel like I would regret not betting yes on this bet because I don't want to have to watch that entire game knowing the Rams or the Bengals, I guess, are one trick play away from a touchdown.
Yeah, this is one of those bets where you look at it and you're like, let me come back to it. Then you drink like four or five beers and you're like, oh, wait, this is definitely going to happen. So I would be inclined to bet no if I'm sober, but if I've had a few drinks, and I think I might put a little five spot down and see what I can do and hope that Odell Beckham throws a touchdown in the Super Bowl. But, you know,
You can talk yourself into both sides of this, right? You can go with, hey, maybe Cincinnati consider themselves big underdogs, right? Maybe a Cincy special or something like that, something completely wild. And then you could say, hey, it's Sean McVay. He's been here. He got his ass handed to him, you know, only scored 3 points. And he's like, well, I better have some stuff in my back pocket because 2 weeks is a long time to prepare for
Look
a team.
You.
I can definitely convince myself to bet on this one. Now, the problem's going to be is, it's going to happen, and the guy's going to get tackled at the one, and I lose.
You know, no, here's what the problem's going to be.
So it's consistent with the segment. That's how I'm going to lose my money.
No, the problem is going to be you're only going to be like, oh, that's kind of a crazy bet. Let me put like $5-$10 on it, and then it happens. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, I should have put like $50 or $100. I knew he was definitely going to throw a touchdown in the Super Bowl. That's where
the slippery slope where I end up in some sort of anonymous program. What else do we have?
All right, we got another one. This one, guys, I hope you like free money, because this one is free money. The Evan McPherson special. The longest field goal made by either team will be more than 47.5 yards. Ooh. That's a chip shot for our boy Evan, and that is minus 126.
I don't like this one.
You don't like this one, Bill?
I don't like this one because everyone is on the Evan McPherson bandwagon. And when everyone's on a kicker bandwagon – That's never.
But it doesn't have to be him. It could be either one of them. And so, like, a 48-yard field goal, I think, will be kicked and made in this game.
That's true. It feels like the public's on that one. That makes me nervous.
Okay, I think that would make me a little nervous too. But at the same time, I don't think that Sean McVay or Zach Taylor are like overly aggressive coaches on fourth down decisions. So. You know, if they're looking at like, you know, a 4th and 4 with a 50-yard field goal, I think we've probably seen them in situations before take that field goal. And in a game like the Super Bowl, they might pucker up a little bit and get a little scared and kick that field goal. So I get why the odds are minus 126 on this. And I think that I would be inclined to take that.
Did you not hear Charlie? Free money.
Can I tell you guys a story about losing bets on the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. Please.
So, 2011, I bet on there not being a safety in the Super Bowl. Wrote about it for Grantland. The odds are in your favor. There's not going to be a safety. I go to the Super Bowl in Indianapolis. It's Giants-Patriots. I'm in the press box. Tom Brady commits a penalty in the end zone on the first drive for a safety. I lose enough money that I felt pretty bad about myself in the press box in that game. But I can't say anything because I'm in the media. Now, you'd figure, okay, I learned my lesson. The following year, same bet. I'm like, it can't happen twice in a row. And then final drive of the game, Ravens take an intentional safety on the final drive, and I lose again to the same bet. Thankfully, I did not bet.
You thought you got me gambling, but now you're telling me these stories, and it's scaring me. Charles, what's yours?
I don't want you to lose money,
Izzy.
That's your own fault.
That's your own fault, Charles. You know that.
I know, but I was riding.
What was the spread of that one?
No, I bet them win outright. But I think the Patriots are favored by 3.5. But I mean, I'm a Falcons fan, Izzy, if you didn't know. So I was feeling good the whole game. And then, you know, it all fell apart for me real quick. And I legitimately almost stopped watching football. But
these are two of my favorite kickers, by the way. Evan McPherson, he's a Gator. Yeah. Matt Gay. You know, what else we got?
All right, we got one more. And this is a real line. And I need your help deciding how to go on this one.
Okay.
Will there be an octopus at any point in the game? Ooh. Like an actual octopus on the field in the stands? Yes, plus 1,400. No, minus 2,500.
Are we sure that's what the bet is about?
How about anyone who's watching this, if you're in L.A. and you're going to the game, put on that octopus suit for me real quick.
Yeah.
And then I'll bet yes on this, and we can all make a whole bunch of money. I'll even split some of the earnings with you. How about that?
I'm pretty sure that's illegal, but
it is.
If it happens on Debatable,
put down enough money where we can get bail money.
If it happens on Debatable, I think it's for entertainment value only, so we can't be convicted. This show happens in international waters, right? In the backdrop, in Missy's backdrop, that is international waters right there. So we're safe.
I'm so confused by this question.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Honestly, I'm confused now too. I'm furiously Googling to see if an octopus is something else for football statistics.
I know what an octopus is. I don't want to say it. Izzy, I want you to tell me what you think an octopus is when it comes to football.
We might have to be on the air for a long time for me to even come up with a guess.
So an octopus is the 8-point play. It is the you score a touchdown and you convert the 2-pointer afterwards for 8 points. 8 legs on the octopus. The octopus is scoring 8 points on one.
So when was this made a thing and why weren't we aware? Like why were Charles and I given the memo? Like it should have been picked up a long time ago.
This is like one of those Facebook holidays where you'd never heard of it, and then 4 years ago, everybody you saw was celebrating it. Like it
National
was like, you know,
Fondue Day?
Yeah, National Little Brother Day. You know, like this is not a real thing. I think right around like 2017, you know, like I think Fox got word of it, and then it was suddenly, okay, all of our announcers are going to say octopus anytime this happens. So it's not a real thing, but it's quasi a real thing.
I must have watched way too many games on mute or didn't watch any Fox games because I had not heard that at all.
Producer interjection. Okay,
so
here we go.
I would like to apologize to the viewers for thinking this is about a live octopus, but after doing a tiny bit more research, this started in 2019 by someone at SI named Mitch Goldich, and yes.
Oh, I know
now,
Mitch.
I am now hammering the yes.
I didn't know Mitch. Hi, Mitch. That's great. Yes.
I'm taking the yes.
Yeah.
What percentage of games do have 2-point touchdowns and 2-point conversions completed? Like, I feel like there's pretty much every game I can think of.
Pretty much every game. I don't know. I mean, certainly it feels like the guys who are likely to score a touchdown are also likely to be featured on their 2-point plays. Like, Cooper Kupp is probably the favorite to score a touchdown, and Cooper Kupp is certainly going to be a guy they look for on 2-point plays. So,
the same player has to get them both.
Yes.
That's a little nugget I did not recognize.
Okay. I was about to say, because just a 2-point conversion, like the odds on that, like I would definitely take it at plus 1,400.
Yeah.
But
same guy has to score the touchdown and then also be the guy who either runs in or catches the 2-point play. So
who's the biggest receiver on either team? I would say that'd probably be my
T. Higgins would probably
be my best guess for it. Because I don't think you're going to go, you know, Joe Mixon touchdown, Joe Mixon extra 2-point conversion, right? Unless you toss it to him. But I'd say Higgins. But yeah, I'll take a yes.
I will say, there should also be a bet for whether there's a real octopus that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you should be able to cash it either way.
That's fair. It wasn't made clear, in the bet description. So that's on the betting team.
Totally agree. By the way, you made Mina Kimes cringe so hard thinking about back-to-back goal line fades to T. Higgins. But we will move on.
They don't have to be
game of what are the chances?
Yeah.
This is a game where we will show you guys a clip, and you'll tell us the chances. The first one, what are the chances that Aiden Hutchinson has the proper amount of confidence heading into the NFL?
To be honest with you, I think my game is going to flourish in the NFL just because I watch a lot of NFL film,
right,
and I see the differences in the game, just the way those quarterbacks hold onto that ball.
That's what I mean. It's,
longer,
it's better
like,
for pass rush.
100%.
Right.
So I look at that, I'm licking my chops because you go to college, you get so many RPOs, balls out like that,
you can't
and
even
you
get
to the quarterback, but you hit him and no sack, no nothing. Right. So I think when I get to the NFL, I'm going to light it up.
Was that Chris Sims in the center there?
Do we lose Izzy? I'm getting a very bad connection with Izzy talking.
Yeah.
It sounds like Izzy's a robot now.
Yeah. It does.
I'm sorry, Izzy. That's why you don't have a line there.
He's got a lot of confidence. Like, man.
Yeah.
He's making NFL pass rush seem like it's a joke. Like, it's kind of easy. And I think he's got, you know, the proper amount of confidence, and I think that confidence might be a little bit humbled when he steps on the field for the first time and has to play against, you know, I don't know, if he gets drafted by the Lions or what have you, when he lines up against Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker for the first time in practice, he might not be thinking the same exact things that he's saying today. So, you know, I think it's good for him to be confident. The chances that he has the proper amount of confidence heading to the NFL, I'll give him a 100%, and just know that that's probably going to get knocked down in the coming months.
Can you hear me now? I really don't know what this is like.
No.
You know, like, I have never had this kind of I have no idea what Izzy's saying. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love Izzy, but I can't. I don't want to cut Izzy off, but I feel like Izzy just is defeated. I can't understand you. I'm sorry. Oh, Izzy's not going to sign language. That's nice. I will say that I think I have never experienced this kind of confidence in anything in my day-to-day life. Like, this is, as someone who's just constantly afflicted by imposter syndrome, to be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do something that's much harder than I do right now, and I'm gonna be better at it then because relative to what I am now, like, I don't know what that's like. I've never experienced
hold on so sorry, I have to cut you off,
please,
guys. We have a breaking Woj bomb right when breaking from Shams,
give it to us.
The Brooklyn Nets and Philadelphia 76ers are finalizing a trade, sending James Harden for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, and draft picks. Sources tell The Athletic and Stadium.
Ooh. Wow. You're dead ass?
I would have been so sad. I would have been so sad if it hadn't happened. While we were on the air, after like 3 minutes off the air, I would have insisted that we come back on the air to talk about it. It just feels so right.
Wow, what a time for Izzy's stuff to go out too. This is awful.
Do you think the two are related? Like, do you think that Izzy maybe like, you know, it broke down his phone line?
James Harden hacked into his systems after what he was saying.
James Harden already getting his revenge.
I guess we gotta see the draft picks for this, right? But
that's true.
I don't know if this is just like too video game brained of me, because that is, you know, how I consume a lot of the NBA. But I think of an offense that has Joel Embiid and James Harden, and if James Harden is like locked in, I think that this is such a good pairing together, where you know, James can handle a lot of the ball handling that maybe Ben Simmons didn't want to do or wasn't equipped to do. Because I think that James wanting to take shots is not something that has ever been a problem for James Harden. So now, to me, this is just a way that you can create a lot more space for Embiid. And if he's putting up these numbers without someone that's James Harden's caliber on the court, to me, that's just it's like the sky's the limit for what Joel Embiid can accomplish here. And also, you're finally getting another all-star, like, super high-level player back on the court with Joel Embiid, which they haven't had for, you know, a good stretch of the season, or really the entire thing.
For sure. I mean, you get a Sixers team that's not dependent on Embiid, too, right? Like, you know, like yes, Tyrese Maxey's played well. Like, they have other options. But, like, now you can rest Joel Embiid a little bit. You don't have to worry about having Embiid being the primary scorer on your offense for the vast majority of minutes in that game. You can kind of have those little, you know, those stretches where it is a Harden-led team. And I think that's really valuable. And then I think it also from the Nets side, like, you know, you're adding a third player to a team that desperately needs someone playing at a high level right now, and a guy who fits better with KD and with Kyrie than James Harden did. Do we have another interjection here?
I just have an update on this. The 76ers gave two first-round picks in addition to Simmons, Curry, and Drummond, which honestly, for the Nets getting giving up a player who had sort of quit on the team?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of awesome.
I kind of like that on both sides.
Me too.
I think that seems like a win-win to me. Because the Nets, you get to recoup on some of those draft picks that you're missing out on, although they probably won't be that valuable if everything works out with James Harden. But at the same time, you're getting a Ben Simmons who, like we talked about earlier, I think is such a good fit for this Nets team if you can get Kevin Durant back and healthy. Because I don't think – like we all know that that Ben Simmons is a talented basketball player. I think, you know, the hate comes from small moments in the playoffs, but – overall, when we look at the whole totality of Ben Simmons, he's a talented player and one of the better defensive players in the league. And now you're putting him on a team where he doesn't have to be relied on to take a shot or really any shot. And to me, this is a good spot for him just to be able to grow as a person and as a player because he doesn't have to deal with a city that might have gotten a little bit tired of him. And as we know, with Eagles fans and Sixers fans, they can be a little bit harsh sometimes.
And yeah, I mean, this is a spot for Ben Simmons where he gets to be the third option. He's never going to have to be the primary scorer. There's always going to be somebody who wants the ball in those situations where he doesn't necessarily want to shoot. A city that kind of knows what they're getting, right? Like I feel like if James Harden had stuck around any longer in Brooklyn, the city kind of already has turned on him and would have kept turning on him further. So now you're getting someone who, in Ben Simmons, who wants to play for you, who wants to be there. Like you can get behind Ben Simmons in a way that the city was not going to get behind James Harden. And by the way, like, I don't know about you, Charles, but like I also feel like there should be an obligation from the NBA that we see these two teams play in the playoffs. Like, that would be such an amazing series. James Harden going back to Brooklyn, Ben Simmons going back to Philly, Kyrie only playing in Philly. Like, I think on so many levels, that would be an epic postseason matchup. I feel like that has to happen.
Oh, yeah, we need that. And they're only, you know, the Sixers, they're only three games ahead of the Nets in the standings. So if Ben Simmons actually shows up and is ready to play, I don't see why the Nets really can't get back in, you know, the top six of the Eastern Conference and not have to worry about one of these play-in games. But I'm interested to see what Ben Simmons looks like as well. You know, he's been sitting, he's been out since, the entire season, really. So I'm interested to see how long it takes him to get up to shape, because if he can get up to speed quickly and really mesh into what KD and Kyrie are already doing, which I think his skill set's the perfect fit there, I think that this trade for the Nets really has a chance to hit the ground running. And on the flip side for the Sixers, like we said, if James Harden is ready to go and ready to get back to scoring 25-plus points a game, then I think he's one of like, the perfect fits for Embiid.
How quickly do you think James Harden's hamstring injury will clear up?
Oh, I'm sure as soon as Sham sent that tweet, he was like, ooh, I feel a lot better.
He's got the Theragun on it now. He's just like, oh, yeah, let's screw it up real quick. It was like when Jalen Ramsey had that back injury with the Jaguars. He got traded to the Rams. He got to L.A. suddenly, oh, my back is healed. It's a miracle. Yeah, I went and got acupuncture.
It was the dispensaries in L.A. That's why Jalen Ramsey got healthy again. Actually, that's not true, because NFL players don't smoke weed. That's not true.
That would never happen. Another producer interjection.
We are an ESPN show, so I have to ask. I have to gas bag for a second. Who do you see coming out of the East now? Philly or Brooklyn?
Ooh.
I have to pick between these two.
Yeah, can we pick the other teams that are better in the conference?
I guess you could take the Bucks too, but like solipsistic world.
Between these two, I don't know. I kind of lean on the 76ers just because Kyrie has his little thing going on. KD has been hurt. And also I'm just really bullish on the offensive potential between Embiid and James Harden. Like, if you start in a pick and roll and you can still get the three-point game to be a part of that, like, that's pretty deadly, I think, for the Sixers offense. I think that the Nets might have a better collection of talent, but to me, if you're one of your best players is not going to be there for half the games and we don't know what shape really Ben Simmons or KD is in right now, to me, the Sixers seem like a sure bet.
Yeah, I don't know. I would go Nets here because I feel like, number one, KD is – Embiid's better than KD, I think, at this point, but I think it's closer. KD's such a good role. Appears to be stuck in the universe. I feel like having having KD coming back presumably for the playoffs is going to make a huge difference to that team. And I think you have fresh legs with Ben Simmons, right? You know, like it's not just Ben Simmons who's been worn down by half a year like a lot of these guys have. Like Ben Simmons should be ready and raring to go after maybe a couple of warm-up games and be a focal point of that team over the next, you know, few weeks and then into the postseason. So I feel like we might see the best Ben Simmons we've seen just because he's freed of that situation. He's in a place where people want him, and he's not tired. I think that's such a huge advantage to have a young player who has fresh legs this late in the season for a championship contending team.
I think I'm going to make some people seasick if they're watching this because I'm holding my computer and my laptop in my right hand as I talk to you guys. Perfect timing, by the way, because the answer to the question is the Miami Heat should be the favorites in the Eastern Conference. Thank you. Given that they are the best team in the conference and they haven't really made any moves yet. And so none of this really surpasses them, I would say. But if somebody put some sort of weapon to my head and forced me to choose, I like what the Nets have. I do like Joel Embiid a lot. I think he's, you know, could make a run for MVP here. But I still think if KD's healthy and, oh, man, I forgot about the Kyrie on the road thing. Oh,
yeah, that's kind of messy.
I'm going with Philly of these two. The answer is definitely Philly if these are the only two options. Miami Heat should be hanging around in the end, though.
Yeah, Brian Cortez, though, if you listen to this, enough with the culture chatter. I'm coming for you.
No. I am here to defend.
Heat chatter is finished.
And parakeet Cortez and all of his glory. By the way, totally ruins the beach behind me, right? Now you guys realize that it's just a little screen and I'm not on an island. You guys want a tour of my room? Or? No.
That'd be great.
No, that's right. It's a bit of a mess. I just landed from Charlotte today, which, by the way, I don't know if I was just super tired or what, but does it make any sense that it's pronounced Charlotte?
I'm in Charlotte right now, actually.
Oh, are you?
How should it be pronounced?
Charlotte. That's how it's spelled.
Charlotte?
Yeah, it makes more sense to call Florida Florida than it does to call Charlotte Charlotte.
So in Japan, isn't it Lotte? Isn't L-O-T-T-E Lotte or Latte? Lotte?
I don't know, but Charlotte's in North Carolina. North Carolina's in the United States. So I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't think the names might take too kindly to you trying to bastardize a name like that.
Guys, we have another piece of breaking news, and this is a question, speculation. Sources are saying that this trade might happen. Long Live the Queen tweeted, did Izzy get traded?
Oh, no!
Just under the gun, I got traded for a reporter to be named later.
Oh, no. We salary dumped Izzy off to
baseball. I don't even know what happened here. This is like a very, very expensive system over here.
What is that thing?
Now all of a sudden I'm holding my 10-year-old laptop in my hand trying to get my opinion out there. I swear I'm making people seasick.
Are you powering that computer with a guitar amp, Izzy? Like that seemed like a very weird connection of cable.
I mean, it's not my computer; it's my camera. I'm just gonna stop making people dizzy and just hold this.
All right, guys. Well, that's the show. I'm really happy we got James Harden in here. Great work, everyone.
I can't believe we didn't even get to talk about Kenny Pickett's tiny hands.
Oh.
Shout out KZ Akpala. Hope you have a great career the rest of the way. You got traded from the Miami Heat, no longer a part of the culture, but hopefully you can share that with others.
Is that going to impact the culture, you think? Is that going to detract from the culture that Akpala helped
culture,
create?
This no. culture has That culture has withstanded with LeBron James' exit.
Yeah.
KZ Akpala.
Bill, how does this sound? Future Carolina Panther Kenny Pickett.
Oh, just trolling Stephen Ruiz here on the end of Debatable. It's happening. Let's just take personal shots at the people we don't like on football Twitter here to end the show. I love it. I think it's going to happen too, which is even more scary.
You should trade me. This is ridiculous.
And his 99th percentile small hands going to the Carolina Panthers.